What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion and Speed Podcast, the show for budget-minded automotive enthusiasts by budget-minded automotive enthusiasts. We got that afternoon after work energy going. My name is Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
At least I got the energy going. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm halfway in between.
Okay.
I'm good.
It is getting kind of late, so it's getting to that, like, you know, turn down phase. But
and the sun sets at 5:30 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it feels like it's been, you know, it feels like it's really late when it's like 7.
I'm finally getting used to that.
Yeah.
When we had COVID, that's kind of when things were really switching, you know?
Okay.
At least that's where I really felt it, because we would sleep in, of course, because we have COVID and we're not, we don't have anything to do. We don't have anywhere to be. So we'd sleep in till like, you know, 10 o'clock, do some stuff, and then it's dark. And we're like, oh, time to go to bed. Oh, it's 5 o'clock. We've been up for 5.5 hours. Like,
and it's time to go to bed.
Yeah, I guess so. Whatever.
Yeah.
Sleep it off.
It still feels crazy late to me. Like whenever, like it'll be 6 o'clock and I'll think, oh, all right, you know, I better start winding down for the night. And then I'll look at the clock and be like, oh, I still have all of my evening in front of me.
I mean, yeah, even now, like a little behind the scenes, it's 7:30 at night right now, which isn't particularly late.
No, it's not. It's not. I mean, the sun would have been up a couple months ago.
Yeah, sun would have been up for a couple more hours.
Yeah.
But hey, it is what it is. I can't believe we're that old now. I just feel like my father complaining about this.
I think it's a good pastime to complain about daylight savings because I'd love to see it go away.
So would I.
Yeah.
I keep saying, like, I'd rather get up when it's dark and go to work when it's dark and have like a little bit of sunlight in the afternoon.
Okay. Yeah.
Because like right now it's like I get up and it's like the sunny out, but it's or like just a little bit of sun. But I was like, cool, I can't do anything with that.
Right, right. I would much rather have sunlight at 5 p.m. than 5 a.m.
Yeah, because I'm not going to be up at 5 a.m.
Exactly.
I did that once where I was like, I'm going to go to bed early. I'm going to get up at 5. This is when I was like writing for the Internet Brands Media Company.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to go to the coffee shop before work and I'm going to write some stuff.
Nice.
And I got into that habit, but man, it is an insanely easy habit to drop.
I mean, all you have to do is stay up till 10 p.m. and then
you're just done.
Yeah.
You're not waking up. It doesn't matter.
And I have trouble falling asleep before midnight, to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, no matter how tired I am, it's really hard for me to fall asleep before midnight.
COVID changed that for me.
Really?
Yeah. Because with, like, the first lockdown and stuff, that's when I started going to bed at, like, 10 o'clock, like an old man.
Like, what else am I going to do?
Pretty much. So, that habit's just kind of stuck with me. But enough about the old man talk. We're not even that old yet, but, you know, it's nice to complain about.
Yeah, all things are relative.
I actually want to start off by talking about, of all things, V6 Chevy full-size pickups.
Yeah, you got to experience one of those last weekend, huh?
Yeah, so I rented one before when I moved my toolbox and stuff, but...
Okay.
Like a toolbox, my toolbox anyways, I don't have anything insane.
Right.
So it wasn't like heavy or anything like that. But this time, for people that follow us on Instagram and Facebook, religionofspeed.co, you would have seen a picture of me finally going to get Iggy and taking it to the new garage. So yeah, I rented a U-Haul pickup and the tow dolly. And I gotta say, like, Iggy's not a heavy car, especially gutted. I mean, I'd be surprised if it's much over 2,100 pounds.
Yeah, so it's a pretty light car.
But still, I couldn't even tell.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like the same, honestly.
That's really cool. So like dolly empty or with Iggy on the dolly, you just couldn't notice.
Yeah, it was a little different, of course, but that truck literally had no problem towing it. I don't know what horsepower those things make, but... Yeah, for just a basic work truck, V6 works now.
So this is boosted, right?
No, I don't think it is.
It's an NA6.
I'm pretty sure it is.
That's really impressive.
I mean, feel free to correct me, audience, but I'm pretty sure that's just like a kind of high displacement V6.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Were you getting decent mileage?
Honestly, I didn't really check.
Okay.
I probably should have. I mean, I put gas in it before I returned it to U-Haul. I just didn't pay attention. Because at that point, well, I had already gone over my budget because like I told you, I rented it and I was like, looked it on the map, may be about 40 miles all round trip.
Yeah.
But when I got to actually the storage unit, which is by where Iggy is, to load up all my extra bullshit, I realized I forgot the keys to the storage unit and Iggy in my car back at U-Haul.
And that sucks. So you had to drive all the way back to the U-Haul in the truck and be like, no, I'm not here to return it.
Yeah, pretty
Hang
much.
On a second.
Yeah. Like, nope, not yet. I actually didn't even, like, I didn't pull in. I got snuck in the side. I'm like, oh, God, I'm so embarrassed.
I do not want to make eye contact with these people.
So I pretty much put double the miles on it that I was expecting. I'm like, whatever. I already spent way too much freaking money on this.
Yeah.
Probably would have been cheaper to hire a tow truck, but.
Sometimes U-Haul is just really expensive.
Right.
I mean, especially if you're going to do a lot of miles.
Yeah.
I recently helped a buddy move from Tennessee to Denver, and his 15-foot truck and a car hauler, $1,400.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
To drive from Tennessee to Denver.
That is, I remember when I moved out to Colorado here, I didn't go with U-Haul. I went with Budget, I think, because they were considerably, they were more budget. they were considerably cheaper, but I don't think it was even that much. That's a longer distance, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's a little closer because you don't have to travel north from Michigan.
Oh, true.
But yeah, so you'd have to go north up through Kentucky.
Okay.
And then you, in St. Louis, you get on I-70 and go all the way across Missouri and Kansas.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. It's got to be pretty close. But even then, even if it's a little bit more, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, $1,400?
Yeah.
That's an insane amount of money. And I understand that they have to charge you for mileage, but it was outrageous. It really was.
Yeah. The weird part was renting the tow dolly was more expensive than renting the truck.
Really?
Yeah. Which makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, that's weird.
There's very little wear and tear on the tow dolly.
Yeah.
It's a small piece of equipment. I guess maybe they just have their rates for their pickup trucks low to get more
to be
sales.
More attractive.
Yeah.
Like, it's this much in town.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And, you know, with the dolly, they never know what they're going to do. Like, you know, obviously with a truck, they can look at the odometer and be like, you did this many miles.
Right.
But with the dolly, you could have driven that thing all the way around the country and then come back.
True. Strange. You would think they'd have a, like, mechanical odometer on those things.
You would
think. Like, hidden away or something.
Maybe they do. Maybe it's a secret.
Right.
I will say I've gotten away with it once. I had to buy a Corolla parts car it was in Apison, Tennessee, which is near Chattanooga, where I was going to tow it.
This was a rear-wheel drive Corolla, right?
It was a rear-wheel drive, an old A86. This was a smashed-up parts car. I was just buying it for my other one, which was in Knoxville at the time. And I was going to use the dolly to pull both of them to Chattanooga.
Yeah.
And I just told them I was staying in town, and I was only towing one car. I was like, I'm towing an 85 Corolla.
Yeah. You don't need to know about the other one or the fact that it's a long ways away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that this dolly is going to do, 400 miles today.
Right.
But you know what? It was fine. So maybe there is a mechanical odometer, but if it is, they're playing it close to the chest.
Yeah, they probably, I mean, to be fair, most of them don't care.
That's true.
The people working at U-Haul, they do not care.
They do set the bar for apathy, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I was there for 45 minutes.
Right. It takes forever to get a U-Haul.
I'm just like, I was late for my appointment, first of all. So they should have had it already set up.
Right.
No, there was like one person working the counter with some lady crying at the counter. Not sure what was going on there. They were there for 20 minutes.
That sounds like a pretty typical U-Haul experience.
And then the other guy who was helping the person in the other checkout area, when he got that person checked out, he's like, I'm taking a smoke break. And he just left.
What?
I never saw that man again.
See, he just walked out that day. Yeah. That was his last day at U-Haul.
Right. That was the longest smoke break I've ever seen. And then the guy that finally came in to help me, he had his phone playing music, which usually annoys me, but this guy was listening to Ghostbusters.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
So I was like, cool, I like you.
Like, okay, you can listen to that.
Yeah.
Please help me though.
He was just listening to old movie songs, like movie theme songs.
Oh, that's cool.
It was like weird playlist, but all right, I got you, man.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Anyways, before we get way too off topic and back into movies, which I still haven't released the Marvel podcast.
Yeah.
Might still do that. That's enough about U-Haul. Anyways, the point is Chevy V6 is pretty good now.
That's impressive, especially without boost.
Yeah.
Like, that's being able to tow and make that much torque out of an NA6 and you not even notice.
Right. Like, I think that thing would have hauled that thing up I-70. Like, maybe not. It might not have liked it that much.
Yeah.
But it would have done it.
I mean, that's, yeah, which is, that's an accomplishment.
Way more than I can say about like a 15-year-old V6 Chevy. Those things barely move themselves.
That's more than I can say about my 4.6 liter F-150.
True. But if you do want to buy a bigger truck because you want to haul more,
yeah,
your options are going to be a little more limited here in the future, unfortunately, it looks like, because the Nissan Titan might be going away.
Yeah, it looks like there's no more plans to replace this guy after 2022, which, you know, it's sad because I like Nissan, and the VK56 is a kick-ass engine.
It is. I love that engine, especially the new ones with the direct injection on them.
Oh, yeah?
They're even better, although they're noisier.
They're noisier?
Yeah, that direct injection is very noisy.
But... Well, Nissan's shown us time and time again that they don't care if their engines are noisy.
Yeah, that's very true. QR25, I'm calling you out. But
yeah, I mean, hey, the KA24, that timing chain rattle,
yeah,
that it's so bad they put out a TSB just to remove one of the guides. just because it makes like, too much noise.
Like, you know what? This is just better. Yeah. It's fine. It's hilarious. I didn't know that. That engine was like before my time when I worked at Nissan.
Yeah.
Well, I worked on maybe two of them while I worked there.
Yeah, it's pretty old now.
Yeah. Like, I think the only ones I really worked on were the early Altimas that had those, the front-wheel drive variant.
Yeah, before they switched it up to the QR25.
Yeah. But, I'm really sad to hear that they don't really have any plans for the Titan. This isn't them canceling it. It's just like... they don't really have any plans to do anything with it right now.
Yeah, they're saying that there's just no plans to replace it after 2022, which, you know, it might just be this generation of Titan because it's been giving them some problems.
Yeah.
You know, it had that very, very short-lived diesel power plant.
Which I'm so sad about.
Yeah, I think Nissan lost the Cummins contract after 2 years.
Yeah.
And they've got some quality control issues with the current generation. Armadas and Titans.
Yeah.
When I was at Nissan selling parts, they had we had one come in with 400 miles on it. And on the assembly line, they noticed the flex plate was bent. Brand new truck. They stacked washers to space it so it would clear the crank position sensor.
Right, which is so crazy.
Right.
Like, that was an on assembly line, like, fix.
Right.
Which is...
for a brand new truck.
Right.
Stacking washers is something you do for your 200,000 mile vehicle that right. you're just trying to keep running.
Like, it's good enough. It'll work.
Exactly. You don't do that for a brand new vehicle.
No, I'd be pissed if I bought a brand new vehicle and found that out.
Exactly. And this owner was pissed because I ordered him a new Nissan flex plate, which also came in bent. So I ordered a second one, which also came in bent.
What the hell was happening to these flex plates? I mean, they were clearly... too flexible. Yeah, that was a terrible pun.
Hey, we were talking about how we're old. Now we've got dad puns.
Yeah, it's true.
So it took ultimately 4 flex plates to fix this truck. And the owner's just sitting there with his brand new truck in the shop.
Right. At that point, I'd be like, just buy it back from me.
Right.
Like, I don't want it anymore.
Right. At this
point. I'm going to go buy a Ford.
Yeah, because you're going to go buy a Ford, and which is what a lot of people did.
Right.
Because some of the specs are saying that the Ford F-Series will sell more units in a month than the Titan can sell in a year.
Yeah. Which I believe. I don't know when the last time was I saw a new Titan on the road.
Last time I saw one was in the shop at Nissan, right?
And like I said, I'm so sad about that diesel because that's a Gale Banks design it's from back in the day, but if I remember this story correctly, which was from Gale Banks' mouth, from the Smoking Tire podcast when he goes on there, plugging a way bigger podcast than us is a strange thing to do. But I do suggest going to listen to Gale Banks on there because that man just has great stories.
Okay.
But they designed that engine originally for the military. They were designing it to sell to the military for newer, like...
okay, like whatever, armored vehicles.
Yeah, whatever the new Humvee replacement is.
Yeah, like the MRAP.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. So instead, it ended up being contracted to Nissan. But once again, Nissan proved that they can just drop the ball when... the time is, you know,
right.
In their when things are in their court, they just drop the ball sometimes.
And yeah.
The quality issues on that diesel, from what I understand, just ruined it.
Which is a shame because it's not like they drop the ball on everything.
Not everything.
We're not talking about Mitsubishi. We're not talking about Kia.
Right.
Like, we're talking about a brand that produces some real gems, even in the modern era.
Right.
I mean, the VQ V6 was a great motor.
Yeah. Even the new, the VR30...
Yeah, the VR in TT. In the new Z.
Well, and also in the Q50, Q60.
Oh, the Infinity.
Yeah, whatever yeah, Q that is.
It's the Q60,
is.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the twin turbos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good car, a good engine.
Yeah, and I mean, they're beefing it. They're cranking up the power for the new Z, and they're releasing it in a car where they know it's going to be tuned.
Right.
And they stand behind it. So it's weird to see them just fucking up like this.
Right. Well, especially when they know how to make trucks, the Frontier, everybody, like, people love the Frontier.
Yeah,
it is kind of, you know, the RC Cola to the Tacoma's Coca-Cola, but...
That's a great analogy for it, because the primary Frontier buyers are the people who look at the Tacoma and go, too expensive.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then they go buy a Frontier, and you know, they just changed the Frontier. It stayed the same from 2004 till last year.
Yeah, it's an incredibly long run time.
Yeah, that's a crazy long production run.
Yeah.
And you don't make something that long if it doesn't work.
Right, that's the thing. That's why they didn't really do anything with it. It just worked.
Yeah.
Like, I think at the end, they were mostly getting, like, you know, commercial sales more than anything.
Yeah, they do a lot of fleet stuff.
Mm-hmm.
O'Reilly buys Frontiers for their delivery trucks.
Yeah, I mean, how many, like, landscaping companies do you see with Frontiers?
That's true.
You know? But they don't do to Toyotas because they're just too expensive.
Exactly. And the Frontier takes a beating. It keeps on running.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with my little Frontier when I was delivering parts. And it was the four-cylinder. It had no power to speak of.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm merging on the interstate, I had to go wide open.
Yeah.
But, you know, that thing was stable at 90 miles an hour in the rain with parts in the back.
The ironic part is that four-cylinder was gutless and the four-liter was like... almost too powerful.
It was too much. Yeah, I think it had like a 5,000-pound towing capacity.
Yeah, and it would light up the tires all the time.
Yeah, which those are full size numbers,
right? Yeah, I mean, it's not it. The problem is now, like, I've been waiting for older Frontiers to get cheap.
Yeah,
but the Frontiers kind of maintained. You can get like an old Pathfinder with the same 4-liter, same chassis, same everything like that for like $4,000 or $5,000. Frontier, you're looking at like 8 or 9. Xterra, you're looking at like 9 or 10.
The Xterras are like, they have some cult status.
They really do.
Yeah.
You don't think about them very often, but a lot of people prefer them to like Jeeps and stuff.
I don't blame them for that.
Right? Yeah, no, I mean, I love that whole platform, honestly. That has its issues for sure, but being a Nissan tech, I know how to fix those issues, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I'm not even a tech, and keeping my old Nissan running is... not been something that's been too difficult for me.
Right, true. Nissan's generally, like, they have their issues, but generally you can, like, the do-it-yourselfer can keep those things running.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, back to the Titan. Like, see, this is the problem, though. Like, we started talking about the Titan, and we're just like, no, let's talk about the good Nissan pickups.
Right, we're optimistic.
Yeah, but it's just like, that's what people like. This is why the Titan's going away.
That's why it's like, because everybody just forgot about it.
Yeah, pretty much. They're like, oh, the Frontier, great pickup.
Yeah.
Wait, Titan? Oh, yeah, I remember that thing.
We were talking about the Titan, weren't
yeah.
we?
Yeah. And I like the first gen Titan a lot.
I mean,
I don't like the fact they get 10 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, those.
But
there's a price for that badass VK56.
Right. I do have GR Yaris news, but before we move on to that, I will. Want to talk about Circuit of the Americas, because you brought this up.
Yeah. Apparently the clay-like soil in Texas requires a lot more, or repaving to happen a lot more frequently, to the point where MotoGP threatened to sit the race out at Circuit of the Americas because some of these bumps were too bad, which, I mean, MotoGP racers are probably the ballsiest racers in racing.
Yeah, probably.
One-wheel drive, no downforce.
Right.
If you go down, you go down.
Right. You're sliding.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have, like, other bikes around you, and you might have to worry about your own bike flying over you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Decapitating you as you hit the wall.
Right. I will say, like, it seems like MotoGP anymore, like, the safety standards are, like... like, you don't really see or hear of MotoGP, like, issues.
I guess that's true. I don't know if it's because if there's a wreck in MotoGP, people don't publicize it too much because it's...
yeah, it's not as popular. Because
it's MotoGP and right. Everybody expects there to be a wreck.
True. I think part of it is just the fact that MotoGP pretty much only goes on tracks with big runoffs and stuff like that.
Oh, that makes sense.
So even if you go down, typically you slide now. You know?
Yeah.
But then again, you can get into the gravel trap. And once you do that, you tumble. That's where you break shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, you can slide on leather, but if you're flipping end over end.
Right. That's like my dad always just tell me about riding motorcycles, and I've never ridden motorcycles on the road, but he's like, you know, no matter what, just wear your leathers, because then you slide and you might get some road rash, but you'll be fine. If you wear jeans and like a jacket and stuff, that grabs the freaking pavement, and then you tumble and then you break shit
because you're just spinning.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Some words of wisdom from my father.
That's good words of wisdom.
Right?
I once rode a motorcycle in shorts and burnt my leg on the exhaust. Everybody told me I was an idiot.
I saw a guy today on a sport bike in shorts.
Right? And he's in Colorado, so he's probably weaving in and out of traffic, driving on the medium.
Yeah, he wasn't doing that. But I was just like, I'm like, dude, it's 46. Like, I understand it's nice, but it's not shorts nice.
Right.
It's not shorts on a motorcycle nice.
It wasn't shorts outdoors nice.
No. Like, the man was dedicated. He wanted to be on a motorcycle. But yeah, I guess the even Formula One cars and Indy cars have been having issues with the, according to this article, about the roughness of the track.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not even that old of a track, and they're already repaving it.
Yeah, apparently that clay soil just requires it to settle. And I think the last time they repaved it, they were removing pipes that were underneath the track.
Yeah.
On the back straight.
Huh.
So.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, this track was kind of made in a bit of a rush, you know, because I think they really wanted to get F1 back in America.
Yeah.
You know, and ironically, this kind of reminds me of the story of the first Indianapolis 500. I have a book that I was reading about it called Blood and Smoke. The first Indianapolis 500, actually, it hasn't even got to the 500 yet, but the first race at Indianapolis was a complete shit show because the track wasn't done and they were racing on it
on like dirt, and
pretty much I can't remember exactly how the first track was. I'm pretty sure it was like white bricks. Like,
wow,
it was a terrible idea. But they just like didn't finish the track in time, so like the racers are like practicing and there's still like there's people on the track trying to finish the track.
Can you imagine like trying to hit the apex of a corner and seeing like a paver, like, yeah, like it's like, oh my God, like he's in my line.
Yeah.
What like do I do?
Construction worker just there. 1910 standards, or when I can't remember the exact year, early 1900 standards for safety.
Well, that's like you were saying a few podcasts ago, that's just sitting on top of the car with a leather helmet and goggles.
Right.
Because that's the best you've got.
Yeah. With a co-pilot that's like pressing a lever to keep oil pressure in the engine. I'm just like, what is even happening? The fact that we have racing to this day and that the Indianapolis race didn't completely destroy any chances of racing. Like, there were people calling for boycotts of cars, period, after that.
Wow.
Like, 5 people died. Oh, no, like, I think it was 7 people died, including 3 spectators.
That's insane.
Yeah. Like, everybody remembers the story of Le Mans.
Right.
That big crash.
Yeah, the Mercedes died. Crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, the early days of Indy just don't get talked about.
Yeah, I mean, that's a complete shit show.
Right?
I feel like if there were more than 3 spectators, it might have been more of a bloodbath.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that built it was a fucking shyster, complete scam artist. Like, the fact that we have racing in America is fucking shocking.
And we not only have racing, we have that race.
Right.
And that track.
Right, one of the biggest events in racing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. It's a great story, and I kind of want to do a summary video on it sometime or something like that. But if you do want to read in depth, Blood and Smoke is a great book on it. I'm actually not actually done with it. The Undertaker of the town is a reoccurring character in that story.
Holy shit!
Just to let you know how ridiculous that is. Luckily, I mean, yes, we're repaving COTA, but it's not that.
Well, and it really shows how far we've come.
Right.
When it's like, oh, okay, this is a little bumpy.
Right.
We're going to repave this.
Redo everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of like, the track's not done. Just go.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we've come a long ways in, you know, 100 years.
Yeah. Which I guess we should expect that.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
100 years is a long time, and it's also not a very long time.
In 1906, the Wright brothers hadn't even moved to North Carolina.
Yeah. True. Man, time flies, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully COTA gets fixed. I'm sure they will. There's so much money at that track.
Yeah, and you know, it's cool that they're rushing. Like, I hate that they have to rush it, but I'm glad that they want F1 so bad they're willing to do it.
Right.
Like, in this article, they're like, well, 2 months before the Saudi race, they didn't even have a track.
Right. That Saudi race, that was just last weekend. That was a goddamn shit show too.
Really?
Yeah. Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen are just, they're very dueling it out right now. If you're not watching F1 right now, you are missing an era of F1. This is going to be one of those great rivalries that's talked about for a long time.
Okay, that's awesome. I need to catch up on F1 this season.
The F1 TV, the subscription service, they do the race in 30. So okay. It's like a recap in 30 minutes.
Oh, cool.
Honestly, they do a very good job at it. So if you don't have time to watch a two-hour race, that's a really good way. You catch all the important stuff anyways.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know ESPN will live stream it too when it's happening.
Yeah, and I mean, I love watching the whole race, of course, but I will be the first to admit that while F1 can be very exciting, it can also sometimes be very boring.
Sitting through that whole two-hour thing.
Yeah, sometimes like things just start, everybody does their pit strategy, nobody passes, and the race ends. You're like, huh, well, that one wasn't a good one.
But I just watched a very long commute.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, what's next? Oh, yeah, the GR Yaris.
All right, back to it.
Yeah, I got to – every podcast I got to talk about damn car.
We have to talk about Gadzoo Racing.
Yeah. This one's interesting. So a while back, we posted – or we talked about that Corolla that Toyota made in Japan with the hydrogen-powered internal combustion engine.
Yeah.
We did the sound clip about how it sounded good and weird.
I think
it
sounded really good.
Yeah. Well, of course – they did the next thing, of course, and put it in a GR Yaris.
And this is really cool because it's a lighter chassis.
Mm-hmm. Still got the all-wheel drive.
And it would be really neat to just see, you know, hydrogen infrastructure.
Right.
For some of this stuff. Because then we keep some internal combustion and we still get to save the world.
Right. And apparently, like, it's not just Toyota that's, like, kind of investing in this. In this article, it said that, where is it? There we go. Toyota, Mazda, Subaru, Yamaha, and Kawasaki announcing a collaboration with the aim of using fuel towards achieving carbon neutrality, with the fuel being hydrogen.
That means we're going to see a lot of different layouts and different displacements go to hydrogen.
Right?
Like, if Subaru's there, we're going to see a boxer hydrogen.
Yeah.
With Mazda, we may even get lucky enough to see rotary-powered hydrogen.
Didn't Mazda make a RX-8 hydrogen-powered car?
I saw the concept, but I don't know if it ever ran.
Yeah, I don't know. I vaguely... This was years ago.
Because that was when Mazda was doing the vision concepts.
Okay.
For everything, and that was like their whole, like, you know, they when they introduced the anime styling for their cars.
Yeah.
The anime styling.
Yep, you nailed that.
they were talking about a lot of different kind of green technologies, and I remember the concept, but I don't know if that ever actually, if there was a running production model.
I think there was like a test mule anyways.
Okay.
Because I vaguely remember just seeing an RX-8 with, you know, hydrogen and stuff across it.
Yeah.
And articles going around about it.
But, yeah. I remember seeing it on the pedestal at SEMA. But I don't know if it ever...
Like, yeah, it might not have ever ran. You know, we don't actually know.
Cool idea, though.
Right?
And I'd love to see it.
But what makes me excited mostly about this is, well, A, it's a GR Yaris, so I just love it as is. But because I've kind of changed my tune when it comes to climate change. So I was kind of for a long time thinking to reach carbon neutrality, it's like we got to go electric, we got to go solar and wind and stuff like that.
Right.
And I still think that's the proper path, but I also think humans are extremely stubborn.
We are.
So I think what's actually going to happen is we're going to see hydrogen and those e-fuels that we've talked about before.
Yeah. Yeah, the synthetic fuels.
Yeah, I think we're going to see those take over internal combustion with a mix of electric cars.
Right.
And probably eventually it'll all move to electric. But we're going to see a lot of these in the interim.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to invest heavily in carbon capture technology.
Which, you know, we don't have the infrastructure to go fully electric right now.
Right.
And we've made the point on this podcast several times. That electricity comes from coal.
Right. Or natural gas.
Right.
And natural gas is methane. And so if there's I did some research on this. A very small leak of natural gas, like a very small leak, offsets its entire, like... offset of carbon from burning, because methane is such a more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is.
That's hilarious, because like almost all natural gas lines leak,
right? So that was pretty much the stats that they showed, is like, hey, every benefit that we get from natural gas is just, we're just throwing it away by all these leaks.
Because it's old infrastructure. And I mean, yeah, I have an old house with natural gas.
Yeah.
And it works really well.
Right.
But, you know, it's not green.
No, not at all. So I think this is really what we're going to see in the future, which is nice, because that means us petrol heads, we're going to have to convert a little bit.
Yeah.
We're going to have to work with a much more volatile fuel. But but there is going to be an option out there for us to keep our petrol fix, or our internal combustion fix, rather. And, you know, with e-fuels, our petrol fix as well.
Yeah, we get to hear the exhaust notes still.
Right.
We get to rev something out and actually change gear instead of just having a motor that just on or off.
Right.
Has a speed. I would love to put some Hindenburg graphics on this thing.
Too soon? Maybe? I don't know.
We were talking about 100-year-old tragedy just a minute ago.
That is true. We were laughing about that. So, it's very interesting to see the biggest issue we're going to run into with the hydrogen thing. And they said in here, so that Corolla race car did actually race in a 24-hour race. It only made it 12 hours, unfortunately. Had mechanical issues, which, hey, they're testing out this new stuff.
It made it 12 hours.
Right. In that 12 hours, though, it had to refuel 35 times.
Wow. Okay. So not very efficient.
No, not really. It was like 35 pit stops in a 24-hour race.
You know, maybe
that's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so they weren't hoping to win.
No.
At all. Maybe that's why we never saw the rotary hydrogen.
Oh, God. Can you imagine that?
Rotary inefficiency combined with that. We pulled it into the garage and it's empty.
Right? I mean, combine that with the lack of infrastructure.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and there are certain areas of Japan where you can get hydrogen fuel.
Yeah.
I remember when Honda came out, and I think it was with the FCX Clarity.
Yep.
Which was lease only. But,
oh, weird.
But it was because, you know, it was still so new, and there were only so many stations where you could get hydrogen. But they do exist in Japan thanks to these automakers.
Yeah.
So
it seems like Japan is pretty big on this hydrogen thing.
Yeah. And it's really cool because, you know, this will be branded as an alternative,
right,
to the EVs. And Japan has the manufacturing infrastructure to make it happen.
Right.
You know, even if we're slow to adopt hydrogen stations, the vehicles will be there.
Yeah.
The technology will be there.
Well, in Japan, if they decide that hydrogen is the way they're going to go, they're going to have hydrogen stations everywhere within 2 years because they're Japan, and that's how they do things. Have you seen the video of the like sinkhole that happened on it was either a sinkhole or a bridge collapse. I don't remember which one it was in Japan of a highway, and it was back open the next day.
The next day?
Yeah. It was a time lapse of them fixing it. It was just insane. 24 hours to fix this fucking thing.
If a sinkhole swallowed I-25.
We would have that till my grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
would. They would build a bypass interstate around it.
They would. They have done that. There was, I don't know if it was Colorado, may have been California, a boulder fell on the road. And they were like, huh, that boulder looks hard to move. Let's just build the road around it.
Just leave that road there.
Yeah, it's fine.
You know, there's a section of highway near my house where I grew up in Chattanooga. It was a 10-mile section of highway, and it took them 10 years to redo it.
I believe it.
They started when I was in elementary school, and they finished when I moved away to college.
Jesus. I mean, 470 here, that was under construction forever, and I'm pretty sure they just gave up on it.
They just gave up.
I don't know. I don't think that highway's actually finished. It doesn't feel finished.
There is something weird about 470, right?
Right.
Like, East 470 feels like it's, yeah, you're right. It feels like it's not done.
Yeah. Like, they were just like, meh, good enough.
Yeah.
And just like left. The tolls are up. We're good. I don't give a shit about the rest.
Like, I feel like I'm just going to hit just an orange cone barrier.
Right.
At some point.
Here's back. I can't go any farther. This is weird. Yeah. So more GR Yaris news. But yeah, I really do think Japan is kind of going to go that route. Because if you think about it, a lot of the Japanese makes are kind of falling behind in the EV space.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't think of a lot of really like cutting edge Japanese EVs.
No.
I mean, there's some electric, there's that electric Highlander that made the Chorus of Angels sounds.
That, I think that's a hybrid. I think that's a plug-in hybrid, though. Is that a
plug-in hybrid?
I don't know if that's full electric.
So that wasn't fully electric.
Yeah. Like, they got a lot of plug-in hybrids, but full electric, they haven't really embraced that.
Got the Nissan Leaf.
We have the Nissan Leaf.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's only claim to fame is, like, it was one of the first.
Right, right. And it's still one of the cheapest.
Yeah.
But it's still got to be treated like a throwaway car.
Yeah.
Because once the battery life is over, you just have to get a new one.
Yeah, those batteries, man. I was looking into that because I think I sent you that little Nissan Micra
was
on for sale on Bring a Trailer that I really wanted.
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, this thing has like a 600cc engine. Like, it's not a performance thing. A Leaf transplant, and that would double the horsepower of that thing.
It'd be so torquey.
Right?
Yeah.
So I was looking into Nissan Leaf swaps and stuff like that, and that's the biggest thing kept coming into is batteries.
Yeah, because the Nissan won't even sell their batteries over the counter.
Yeah.
So you'd have to piece it together, and luckily you can get the stuff from like EV West, but
yeah,
it'd be nice to be able to just pull the whole drivetrain out of a Leaf and plug it in.
Right. Which you can do, but then you're just like, you know, those Leaves have such battery degradation right now.
Yeah.
That like the older ones are getting like 30 to 40 miles of charge.
That's horrible.
Yeah. That's really a terrible degradation.
Yeah. And you know, when I was at Nissan, I would get calls from customers wanting to quote out the battery, like, should I buy this Leaf? And it was just no, no. The answer is no.
Yeah, probably not.
Because we couldn't even pull up the pricing on our catalogs. We had to put in an inquiry for the pricing.
Oh, Jesus.
Because they had to be ordered by a tech that was certified.
Nissan loves to do that. Like, when the GTR came out, only one tech store was trained to work on it. He's the only one that could work on it.
Right.
And every time you did service, you had to replace every clip. And, like, they're just... Nissan's really weird about that shit sometimes.
Yeah, when they're proud of it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Apparently, they're proud about the Leaf. Which, I mean... Like I said, credit where credit's due. They were one of, like, actually, they were the first, weren't they?
I think they were the first to market with something that was affordable and available.
Right.
You know, because it was, you had all these concepts for so long.
Right.
But the Leaf became ubiquitous.
Yeah. I mean, you can go back to like the GM EV1, but that was a flop.
Right. Wasn't that all lead acid batteries?
It was all lead acid batteries. And like GM at some point was like, this just doesn't really work. And they just like bought them all back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's only like four or five of them exist anymore because they crushed them all.
That's crazy.
Which, of course, people think is a giant conspiracy by the oil companies.
Right. Well, people love to blame the oil companies for stuff.
Right. But quite frankly, if you really look into that car, like on paper, it does look like it would work really good. In practice, it didn't work all that great. So that's why they just pulled the plug on the whole project.
And they're like, we can't have these out there sullying our name.
Yeah, the great name of Chevrolet in the 90s.
They're known for such good things.
Yeah, like the Chevy LT1 that made 200 horsepower. Speaking of things that are a disappointment, if you order a WRX in Japan, you get a CVT, period.
Oh, that is tragic.
Right? You cannot get a manual WRX in Japan.
Oh, man, that's so sad. And you know, the CVT has been available in the American WRX for a while, but that's the key word.
Available.
Available.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the manual was standard.
Yeah.
And you know, some people like the CVT because the Subaru EyeSight system lets you get all those self-driving features.
Right.
But this is a WRX. You buy a WRX so you can drive it yourself.
Right. I was thinking about that, and I wonder if that is why in Japan they don't have a manual option. I don't know what Japan's standards are for those kinds of things.
You think it's like highway safety standards?
Yeah, I don't know if they're requiring that stuff or not.
I mean, they would be ahead of us in that.
Right.
And that's one area where I'm glad we're behind.
Right.
You know, it's, but yeah, that's really sad because, you know, there is a plus to Boost and CVT.
Yeah, they should, in theory, work very well together.
Right, but CVTs just don't work very well, period.
Right. I mean, even the Subarus at this point, I thought they were holding out pretty good, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're having issues too.
A little bit better than the Nissans, but that doesn't say very much.
No. Once again, very low bar.
Yeah.
The really weird part about these, this is the WRX S4. Which is already confusing to car guys.
Yeah, because I was like, are we looking at an Audi?
Yeah. And it has an STI badge on it, but it's not an STI. So I don't know what the badging on the back of this car is very confusing.
Which I know STI is Subaru's, you know, performance moniker now.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to expand it beyond just the name of one car.
Yeah.
But putting it on a WRX that's not an STI is very, very confusing.
That's very confusing and will make a lot of Subaru fans very mad.
Yeah, it will. Especially what happens when the STI comes out. Is it an STI?
I don't know. But I'm sure there's just like a differentiating thing between the Japanese market and what we're going to get. One thing I did notice, though, is the WRX in Japan gets a rear wiper,
which is
kind of neat. And I wonder, there are Subaru nerds out there that will buy glass from Japan to put in their WRXs because they want that rear wiper.
They want that rear wiper, and they need a new rear wiper motor.
Yeah.
And probably to run lines, because I'm guessing it still runs off that sprayer in the front.
Probably.
The same motor.
Yeah.
Hey, I would be really impressed if somebody pulled that off.
Right? I've seen it before. There was a... I can't remember the name of the company. I want to say Rywire, but they do Honda stuff. But it's a Subaru wiring company.
Okay.
They make harnesses for swaps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think Larry Chen did a feature on this thing. It was a two-door 22B style, you know, clone pretty much.
Nice.
But the guy was super proud of the fact that he found and imported a rear window from Japan. Like, they don't make them anymore, of course, because it's an older Subaru.
Right.
And got the rear wiper and all that stuff. And I remember Larry Chen joking with him. He's like, people buy Skylines and remove the rear wiper blade on it. And you went through all this trouble to import it and put it on your car.
And you have to talk about it at every car meet.
Right.
Because you went through that much trouble.
Yeah. And we should note, this is on a sedan, not a hatchback. So that's why the rear wiper thing is kind of strange.
Which is interesting why they just didn't have this offered as an option in the States.
Right.
I mean, because you still, even on a sedan, having a rear wiper be handy as hell.
Yeah, it would be nice. Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I guess there's a lot of cars in Japan that have that, but we don't, there's no cars in America that have sedans anyways that have a rear wiper.
I wonder if it's the highway safety standards.
Maybe we're getting into that again, too. Yeah,
if they're required.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just, that's like one of those really strange differentiating things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why that?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, why not do that in the U.S.? Which,
yeah.
I know that we've got DOT glass standards here, which that's a big thing on newer vehicles.
Yeah. I wonder if the glass standards are different.
Yeah. I know that, yeah, there's specific glass that's required on American vehicles. And I heard that as an excuse for why we didn't get Skylines. But I know that it's really just crash test ratings.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just because Japan actually still hates us for things we've done in the past.
So they're just, it was like, you don't get the Type R.
Yeah.
Until it's bloated.
You don't get the cool stuff.
Yeah.
We know what you did.
Yeah. That's some dark humor right there.
Apparently we're on that train tonight.
Yeah.
Here's another weird feature about that CVT. They don't refer to it as a CVT. They refer to it as an 8-speed.
You know, that's a funny thing we've discussed before. Is programming in shift points in a CVT so that it makes people more comfortable.
Right.
But that in and of itself makes the CVT even less reliable.
Yeah.
Because you take away the benefit of the CVT.
And then it has to change those bands all the time.
Right.
Which is probably what causes the excess wear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not supposed to shift. Like, just you bought a CVT car.
Right.
Get used to that.
People just cannot get used to that.
Yeah. Which on a turbo car, you should love it.
Right? Hit that peak RPM.
And it just stays there.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense. But
yeah.
Nope. Shift instead. Get yourself out of that power band. Why?
Right. Just so you feel like it's not broken.
Right?
It's like it's going to be broken because you wanted it like that.
Oh, man.
That's hilarious. They're actually referring to that as an 8-speed.
Yeah. So, sorry, Japan. But I guess, I don't know. I guess you just need to buy more manuals.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that the manual's not regulated out of existence in Japan, because that doesn't bode well for the cars we know and love here.
Right, because then at that point, the manufacturers just aren't going to invest in a manual for another market.
Right.
Like, they're just going to be like, well, this is what you get, sorry.
Right, because it's always been a fractional market,
mm-hmm.
and it gets smaller every year.
Although, I will argue, I bet Subaru's sales in North America are better than their sales in Japan.
I could see that. I mean, they actually, the Ascent was created and manufactured specifically for the North American market. You can't even buy one in Japan.
True.
They build it in Indiana.
Because, I mean, just look at the general size of Japan compared to the size of America. And we have markets like the Northeast, the Northwest, Colorado that just love their Subarus.
Absolutely.
So maybe we have enough pull here in America to make changes to how a Japanese manufacturer, like, and as far as like a manual transmission would go.
Maybe America will be the last place you can get a manual Subaru.
I mean, that would be freedom, you know, exemplified. Give me my freedoms.
Give me my freedoms.
We're going to take a break and do an ad break and get me some water. Mouth is feeling a little dry. In the meantime, in our break, Chris, I want you to think about, since we're talking about Subarus, what is your favorite Subaru of all time?
That's a tough call.
And when we come back, we'll have our answers. Be right back, Heretics. Welcome back, Heretics. Hope you enjoyed your break. I sure did. Chris, favorite Subaru?
So, you know, I was thinking about this during the break, and this is an answer I didn't want to give because it really sounds like a cop-out, but I love my BRZ. You know, and I hate to plug my own car because it sounds like something that somebody would just say because they wanted to give you an answer. But
yeah,
but I thought about it, and I used to have a WRX, and it was great. I loved it, and it was faster than my BRZ.
For sure.
You know, boost is excellent.
You had the turbo.
Right, right. And I wish my BRZ had a turbo. One day it will. But it drives so well.
It does.
The chassis is really well balanced. And it's not without its faults. The mid-range torque dip is real.
I mean, let's be fair. No matter what Subaru we pick, I don't think there is a Subaru out there without its faults.
Right. That's true. That's true. They've all got some issues. And you know, that's one thing. Since Toyota weighed in on this, it mitigated a lot of those.
See, but that's where it does feel like a bit of a cop-out because it is also a Toyota.
Right, right. I could say it's also my favorite Toyota.
Yes. But ironically, I didn't even think of the BRZ.
Right.
Because in my mind, that's a Toyota.
Right. I mean, it's a Toyota in a lot of ways.
Right.
It's a Toyota with a Subaru engine.
Like,
in a lot of ways.
Like, I almost forget. Like, I'll even say the name BRZ, but in my head, it's a Toyota.
You want to know what's funny? Subaru salesmen do the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. When I was at Subaru, part of my training was, hey, just don't even mention the BRZ.
What?
Really?
Why?
Because it's your typical Subaru buyer comes to a Subaru dealership and the BRZ is so far out of what they're looking for.
I suppose.
Because you're not looking for, you know, a two-door rear-wheel drive sports car when you walk into a Subaru dealership. Unless you're specifically going there for the BRZ like I was when I went to the Subaru dealership.
That is funny. Yeah, everybody that went to go buy a BRZ knew they were going there to buy a BRZ.
Right, exactly. And in that case, you could have just as easily gone to Toyota.
Right.
I did. I went to Toyota and I went to Subaru, and Subaru gave me a better price.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only, like, that when you were buying those cars, that was like, well, which one costs less?
Right, exactly. And Toyota, you know, Toyota salesmen don't like to behave like they have competition, and Subaru salesmen are willing to cut you a deal.
So out of all of the Subarus, though, we got the 22B.
Right.
We got old Turbo Legacies.
Yeah.
We got the Bug Eye. We have like the SVX. It was some weird shit.
The SVX is one that I've never had the pleasure of driving.
I've driven actually a couple.
Okay.
They are not fast, but they're also not slow.
Okay.
Like, they get up and go. It's a GT cruiser. Like, if you're doing like long haul stuff and in the mountains,
yeah,
I would suggest an SVX.
So it's pretty comfy.
It's comfortable. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's sporty still, you know, it's a GT car.
Yeah.
For sure. But that's not my favorite Subaru. None of those are my favorite Subaru. Surprisingly, I thought hard about this.
Yeah.
And it's a strange choice, I think, but the hatchback STI Hawkeye.
The Hawkeye?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that, and there's not a whole lot of, like, the hatchback STIs faded in and out of existence.
They did. I mean, there was only that generation.
Well, there was a hatchback in the next generation, too. When the STI came back in 2008, it was only a hatchback.
Maybe that's the one I'm thinking of.
The one from the fourth Fast and Furious movie.
I don't even remember the fourth Fast and Furious movie, if I'm being honest with you. But yeah, like the one you see all around here.
Yeah, yeah, the 2010. Like yeah. 2008 to 2010, I think, is when it had that run. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, okay, so this generation. I just had to clarify that real quick.
So that one's right after the Hawkeye.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I thought that was still a Hawkeye.
Which some people may still call it that, but I think a lot of people, I think the conventional wisdom, or the, I don't want to say wisdom, but the conventional knowledge is that it's 07 was the last year of the actual Hawkeye.
See, this kind of proves my lack of Subaru knowledge there for my terminology of body styles, but
I only know because I bought an 08 WRX.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, this one, I love the way this car looks. I love that it's a hatchback, yes, all-wheel drive, turbocharged, six-speed. It checks all the boxes for me. I've never owned one, just simply because here in Colorado, they're just insanely expensive.
And that was pre-COVID.
Yeah, I can't imagine what they're running right now.
Yeah.
And of course, it has its typical Subaru issues,
right,
of reliability.
Yeah.
But the way they did the flares on this one, especially from the back, where around the taillight there, it flares out a lot.
Yeah, it's got shoulders.
Yeah, I love the way they did that. It almost looks tacked on. It doesn't, you know, doesn't look as clean as they maybe could have, but I like the fact that they did that.
And you know what's funny? In true Subaru fashion, when this car came out, it wasn't appreciated.
No, it really wasn't.
People are like, why isn't there a trunk on the STI? Why isn't there a version? And now that there isn't a hatchback STI, everybody's like, why isn't there a hatchback STI?
Yeah, damn Subaru fans don't know what they want.
Right, it's just like the Baja truck. Had the really short production run. They couldn't sell any of them.
Yeah.
Now they can't keep them on dealer lots, and they keep going up in value every year.
Yeah, that's true.
The Tribeca, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand the Tribeca at all. For whatever reason, at my current shop, we get a strange amount of Tribecas.
Oh, that's interesting.
And they're garbage. They're falling apart.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this before, but...
Because there's not a lot of parts for them anymore.
Yeah.
And you were telling me the interior and everything, it's all bespoke for the Tribeca.
And it's all falling apart. I don't understand people's liking for that vehicle, but... Yeah, this one out of all the Subarus, that's my favorite, I think. Especially when they do like the giant rally wings and stuff on them.
Ah, that looks cool.
Like I love a Subaru hatch with a giant wing.
Yeah, putting a wing on a hatch is just a really, really cool thing to do. It's
right.
An aggressive thing to do.
Yeah,
you know, I like to see that.
If there's a couple options for the Fiesta, but none of them, like there's one that's like a racing wing, like a legit, you know, carbon fiber element wing, and it's cool, but it's not, it doesn't flow at all. It just it looks like you bolted a big wing to the Fiesta
plus wing.
Yeah, nobody makes, I wish somebody made one of these like big rally style wings for the Fiesta,
one that actually works with the body lines of the car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat. And your Fiesta would stand out even more than it already does.
Yeah, which is, I don't really need, because I don't need any more attention with, I already have racing stickers on the damn thing.
And it's bright orange.
But yeah, no, that's the one I would go with. I think the follow-ups to that would be old legacy turbos. Just, I like an old legacy turbo, like a wagon.
Like a longer wheelbase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like, I think those are cool. Of course, the two-door, you know, 22B style GC8.
Yeah, the gorgeous one that just sold for $350,000.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, those are beautiful. Yeah. But also the Baja, and also...
The Brat.
The Brat,
which that would be my follow-up if I had to pick a number two, which I've never had the pleasure of driving that, but it just looks like it has so much character.
Yeah.
and the fact that they had seats that bolted into the bed,
right,
so that they could get around the fact that it wasn't actually a truck, so they could import it as not a truck.
Oh, is that why those were there?
Yeah.
You may have told me that before.
Because it had a back seat.
Yeah. And that's another thing, another point to make when I was thinking about this. I'm like, there are a lot of cool, unique Subarus.
There are. It's a brand that's not afraid to take a risk.
At least it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. These days with the CVT WRX, I don't know if I can say the same thing.
Yeah, they're becoming a little more homogenous.
Yeah, but that's because the brand is becoming so accepted as mainstream.
Right.
I mean, Subaru was kind of always that hipster brand.
Yeah.
And now it's a legitimate alternative to Toyota and Honda, like from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, which makes me sad. That's not the Subaru that I know and love.
It is. It's true. At least they have the BRZ.
They do have the BRZ, at least they are still making a WRX of some kind.
They are, and we still get a clutch pedal here in the States.
Right, so it could be worse.
That's a good favorite, though.
Yeah.
The hatchback STI, yeah, because it's not made anymore, and it was underappreciated when it came out.
Right. It's funny to me that I didn't even think of the BRZ.
Yeah.
Because when you said that, I almost went back on mine. But I was like, no, I can't. We can't have the same favorite. But
well, we had the same favorite Honda.
This is true. We did. Yeah. We can't be that much alike, Chris.
That's true.
We've got to have some differences.
We've got to be different or else it's just the same voice talking to you.
Right? Because when I drove your BRZ, it blew my mind how just good that chassis is.
It handles really, really well. And it's just fun.
It is.
I loved my WRX, but I fought a lot more understeer in it.
Yeah. Let's see. How am I going to transition from this to this? I don't actually know. But we have to have our obligatory talk about crossovers.
Right, right. We can't.
GRRS crossovers. That's this podcast.
There we go.
But this one's kind of exciting because we've talked about this thing in the past, but this was a Japanese-only option. That rotary range extender is officially coming to America.
Which is really neat because we saw this when they were talking about it.
Yeah.
And we're like, this idea doesn't really add up. I mean, happy it's happening.
It still doesn't, but yeah.
But hey, they're just charging forward with it, and we're getting a rotary hybrid in the States.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is hilarious to, all right, we're going to make this car more efficient. Let's bolt a rotary engine.
Put the rotary.
To it.
Yeah. Yeah. But like I said, when we were talking about it before, you know, I'm not excited about this car per se, although the MX-30 looks pretty decent for a crossover. If you're going to go crossover, Mazda, you could do a lot worse than Mazda.
Right. Yeah. Mazda makes fun cars, like you've said,
right,
plenty of times in the past.
Yeah. They at least try to make their, you know, DNA of fun into everything.
Yeah.
So you could do worse with this, but I'm not actually excited about the car itself. I'm just excited for when these things wind up in junkyards and I have a little rotary to put in something.
Right? A little go-kart, Miata.
Right?
What did they say the displacement of this extender would be?
I don't actually know if they mentioned that in this article. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
Because ironically, it's a more efficient rotary if they make it bigger.
Right?
Yeah.
So it is a point 333 liter rotary that makes 38 horsepower.
Wow, that is tiny.
That is extremely tiny.
And it's not like the Renesis or the 13B were big.
Yeah.
So
are 1.3 liter, right?
So yeah, those are 1.3. Yeah. So are they gonna call this like a 0.3B?
0.3B is a great name. Yeah, but no, that. Wow, we were talking about go-karts and stuff, but that's perfect.
Yeah, you could put this, you could fit this thing in whatever you wanted to power. We could make a rotary-powered shopping cart.
Right? It says the power plant weighs 220 pounds. I don't know like what all that entails for power plant-wise.
It can't, that's got to be a lot more than just the assembly.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I know rotaries are dense.
Yeah, because it's a lot in a little package.
Right. That's one thing people miss about, like, they think rotaries, oh, it's small, it's light. It's like, no, it's small.
It's just small.
But, yeah, no, 0.333 liters.
That is so tiny. Honestly, a 0.33 liter making 38 horsepower?
Right.
That's why we love rotaries.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's 330 cc's, right? That's how that conversion works.
Yes, yeah.
330 cc's.
Right.
So consider like a 250 cc sport bike.
Right, yeah.
Which probably makes 20 horsepower, maybe.
And that's maybe something for a child.
Right. Well, you know, 250 like Ninja or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, something like that. I think those only make like 20 horsepower.
Yeah, so that's 38 horsepower out of a 333 cc. That's amazing.
Right, that is actually impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, that just makes... Yeah, I cannot wait to just do something with that engine.
Yeah.
I want to find one.
And it's for a... is this a plug-in?
Sure, probably. Okay. I don't know.
The point is it's going to be new technology. It's going to likely have a high failure rate.
It is a plug-in, yeah.
And we're going to see these in junkyards sooner than we'd see something else.
Right? I wonder, though, I guess like the local pick and pull still has like Priuses and stuff in their yard.
Okay.
I was wondering if they were going to do like restrictions on that kind of stuff because of the danger, but.
Oh, of lithium batteries.
Yeah. But I think they do Priuses and they yank the batteries before they put them in the yard.
Which is smart because that's one of the biggest profit drivers.
Like, right. True. Yeah.
Pull that battery.
Yeah. When I was working in the junkyard back in the day, this was like 10 years ago, maybe even more. I'm old. Whenever we got in a Prius, the only thing they would do is like pull the battery and sell the battery. Like the batteries were worth so much. They didn't really, like, we didn't really tear them down very often.
So you didn't even need to make anything on the car.
Yeah, not really. The battery was just worth a chunk of money at that time. Cause that was kind of before the rebuilt batteries for the Priuses were as common as they are now.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause there's Dorman makes one now. There's other aftermarket solutions. I'm told they're not very good, but they are out there.
What the Dorman thing is makes me sad because, it was actually a guy in Michigan that came up with like the way to remanufacture Prius batteries.
Wow.
Like in like a manufacturing sense.
Yeah.
Like he started in his garage doing it himself and he sold the like process to Dorman and then Dorman'd it up and made it shitty.
I like that. We should, that should be an adjective now.
Dorman'd.
Yeah. I just Dorman'd that up.
That's when you have a good idea and you just execute it very poorly.
That's awesome. So the Eternals, Marvel just Dorman'd that up.
They Dorman'd it. It was a great idea.
Yeah.
And poor execution. I wonder who's going to be the first one to do something with this rotary. Rob Dam?
You think?
I mean, he's the one built. He's that the rotary
That's
guy.
That's true. He is the rotary guy. He's going to be interested in this,
right?
So,
and he has enough money. He could just buy one of these and rip the engine out and throw the rest of the car away.
just donate the rest of the car,
right?
Yeah, that'd be funny if he you know took like six of these and powered something with it,
right? just like what would that be? Six times 0.333.
Oh man, I got to do math in my head now.
Yeah, right. I'm not in a math mood right now. Yeah,
and that's a pretty far out decimal too.
Hold on, my math teacher told me I would never have a calculator in my pocket, so I need to learn math.
But, isn't that awesome?
But jokes on them.
Yeah.
That'd be 1.998 liters.
Awesome.
Not even a 2 liter.
Less than a 2 liter engine if you had six of these.
Six rotor. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but hey, that's a lot more power than your typical 2 liter,
right? This is very true.
God, how tiny are the Wankels in this thing?
I want to see one.
It might actually be the size of a Dorito.
It's actually Dorito power. Yeah. Speaking of a lot of power, the Hyundai Elantra N is officially out. We have talked about the N cars before. I ranted about the Kona N and how it's not all-wheel drive.
Right.
It just ruined it for me.
Yeah.
And in that conversation, we talked about the Elantra N and the Veloster N and stuff like that. But yeah, the Elantra N is officially out. It looks really good, in my opinion. The whole blacked-out front end, I actually really like on this thing.
I dig the red lip, too.
Yeah.
Like, all around the car. The wheels look good. And it's a sedan, so you get some use out of it, you get some fun. That is a ton of body roll it's showing in that shot, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is a production car. You know, they all have a lot of body roll. But yeah, like, these engines in these N cars has been, I mean, we'll talk about this in a second. We don't know about its reliability.
Right. It's Hyundai, so we can probably speculate.
Right, but for the price, these things just make like a lot of power for their class.
How much are they going for?
The price on these is $32,925 to start with a 6-speed manual. It is available with that 8-speed dual clutch.
Okay.
At $34,400, which I'm like, when it comes to automatics, if you do a dual clutch, I'm kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
It's allowed.
You made an effort.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, and honestly, Hyundai's dual clutches, like even way back in the first generation Veloster, were, at least when you push them, better than they had any right to be.
Oh, but if you're trying to like kind of putt around in the city,
yeah, they weren't that great. They had some weird shift qualities.
But hey, it's kind of cool that they were track focused.
I'm not really sure if they were track focused. It's just that transmission likes that, you know? It doesn't actually say in this article exactly how much horsepower the N makes. Let's see if I can find another one. 276 horsepower and 289 foot-pounds of torque.
Which, you know, those are respectable numbers. I mean, in a front-wheel drive car, that's tire shredding.
I mean, those are the numbers we were talking about with the Corolla GR.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and which Toyota did it with three cylinders, but still.
Right? They did it with three cylinders and 1.6 liters instead of the, what is this, 2.4 liter? Or something like that?
That sounds about right. They've got a 2 liter and a 2.4, which right now are under the subject of... Most of them are under the subject of a pretty massive recall.
Right. That is part of what I wanted to talk about with this. Well, since you brought it up earlier, is, you know, you got like the Type R, you have the Toyota Corolla GR that's going to be coming out.
Right.
We're entering a fucking great age of hot hatchbacks and really performance compacts, honestly. But I have a feeling if the recalled engines don't fix these, which I don't know if this N is going to be affected by because this is new.
So it's new. So any recall that happens on this has yet to be released.
But yeah, but the Veloster N would probably be under that.
Yeah.
You know, is that going to hurt that car's like future?
You know, I hate to sound cynical, but I don't know how many people expected reliability out of their Hyundais.
I mean, this is true.
And the big thing, and it's funny, I actually I discussed this with a Hyundai tech who's been working on Hyundais for 20 years. And apparently a lot of these boosted Hyundai engines are actually at the upper end of their capabilities from the factory.
Which means if you tune them...
You're likely to pop them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, is funny because that's one of our favorite things about Boost.
Right.
Is that number from the factory is just a suggestion.
Right. I mean, that's one thing that drew me to the Fiesta ST is people were like, yeah, you could tune these up to 300. They take it all day. They don't care.
Yeah. On factory internals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking here is if you push this much past 300, which really is basically factory numbers.
Yeah.
That you might see some failure. And I'm interested to see just how this engine holds up in its stock form.
Right.
It's hilarious to me. You know, now that I'm working as a warranty clerk at Hyundai, it's hilarious to see how many of these recalls are issued and for weird reasons.
Yeah.
So apparently so that right now there's a recall on some battery harnesses.
Okay.
And apparently that's because if you try to jump it and you jump it backwards, you mess up and put the positive on the negative, it will detonate the airbag.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because apparently the airbag circuit is the only one in that car without a surge protector.
Huh.
And it
seems like an oversight, but
right? Yeah. Yeah. You'd think the bomb would have a surge protector on it.
That makes logical sense.
Right. I heard that today and I was like, are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah. And these cars are, it was like the 2012 Tucson's. It's like these cars are, you know, 10 years old.
Right.
And they're just now issuing this recall.
They're just like, I guess it took that long to figure out, like, not many people reverse jump starting those old Hyundais.
Yeah. I just want to know how many people found out the hard way.
Right. Which, to be fair, I mean, it's their fault. Like, it's right. That's weird because that's not really Hyundai's. Well, it is Hyundai's fault, I guess. But, like, they used their car wrong. So.
Right. They jumped it wrong.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it happens, but you right. shouldn't expect the manufacturer to do that.
Yeah.
To fix your problem.
Which, I mean, it's good on Hyundai then.
Right. Yeah. Good on them. Because then again, I mean, you also don't expect the airbag to blow out.
This is true. that can get very expensive very fast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what if somebody's sitting in there?
Right. Well, is that also part of the Takata recall?
You know, maybe it is. That would be hilarious. It's like, oh no, Takata's like, we're not going to cover that, Hyundai.
Right.
You need to fix this yourself.
Maybe that's why they're so concerned about it. They're like, we don't want somebody reverse jump starting the shrapnel in somebody's face. This is just a lawsuit.
Oh,
we're just
man. Gonna... Yeah. Because you're double stacking recalls at that point.
Right.
You've got just cascading failures.
Oh no.
That end up with a grenade in your dashboard.
I mean, there's a grenade in all of our dashboards. We tend to forget that.
That's true.
We tend to forget that there's a grenade like... What, three feet maybe away from us?
It's in front of your face, those of you listening while driving.
Right? Just think about that.
Yeah.
To go back to the Elantra, though, I did want to point out that, you know, we were talking about hot hatches and big power and stuff like that, the Type R and that stuff. But if you want a sedan...
Yeah.
This is the most powerful sedan in its class by a long shot.
Yeah, for this amount of money?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Compared to a Civic Si... which is about 200.
Yeah.
A Jetta GLI, which is probably about 200 as well.
And then you've got Volkswagen maintenance.
Yeah, and you got Volkswagen maintenance. And I think, what other turbocharged front-wheel drive sedans are there?
I mean, on today's market?
Let me rephrase that. How many small sedans are out there?
Yeah, the sedan's going away.
Yeah.
Sadly, because of the crossover.
Yes.
The crossover buyers are going to crossovers now. Yeah, that's interesting. So this thing may just kind of be in its own class in a lot of ways.
Pretty much.
Because if you don't want to spend Honda or Volkswagen money, this is what you got.
Right.
And I mean, yes, Hyundai has its reliability issues, but they will also issue recall upon recall upon recall, and they will honor warranty.
And they have that 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty.
Yeah, so, which is better than anyone in the market right now.
Right. I wonder, you'll have to keep me up to date with how Hyundai deals with, like, because I'm sure you don't see it very often because there's not many people doing it, but tuning.
Right.
Like,
right.
If they're voiding warranties or if they just don't care.
Yeah, so they're gonna jump on any opportunity not to honor one.
Yeah.
You know, having to be the one who submits those, they can be pretty picky.
Yeah.
About what they honor.
Okay.
But they do have a goodwill program. And you see, Volkswagen and Honda aren't as desperate for your business.
Yeah.
So Hyundai will be willing to make more exceptions for you. You know, there's a quality difference.
Yeah.
You know, the interior on the Volkswagen is going to be a cut above everything. And the Honda will run until you, you know, just get sick of it.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, I had somebody ask me once what the difference between a Honda and a Hyundai is. And I said, a Honda is a car you keep for the rest of your life. And a Hyundai is a car you throw away when the warranty expires.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Because I've been curious, you know, with these newer Hyundais. I've been watching as they get up in mileage and stuff like that. Because I was curious because they've... Off the showroom floor, they're great.
Yeah,
I'm honestly shocked with the quality of them. But it is getting... I am seeing in higher mileage, anything over 120, they start to get that cheapness that really starts to show through.
Yeah,
squeaks, rattles.
That chintziness. Which, you know, Subaru interiors are no stranger to that.
Yeah, good point.
My BRZ has weird-ass vibrations, and I feel like I find a new one every day.
Yeah. I drove an Armada today that made so many noises, I couldn't pick out which noise he was complaining about.
Oh, man.
So,
I don't even know. What would you do? What do you do in a situation like that?
You take a ride with a customer, and he points out the noise, and you're like, got it.
Okay, that noise.
That all right, one. That's the one that's bothering you. Cool. The rest, it's fine, but... Yeah. Those have become background noises.
Right, right. You're used to those. That's just white noise at that point. I actually got to ride in one of those new Santa Cruzes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the new Hyundai car truck.
Yeah, I forgot that was a thing.
Yeah, you know, I see a few of them as demo vehicles around the dealer. They're just barely starting to sell them now.
Yeah.
And it's neat on the inside. You know, interior's a little bit cheap, but it's a Hyundai.
I feel like the Maverick just completely stole Hyundai's show with the small car truck pickup.
They will. But, you know, Hyundai's is not most people's first choice.
Right.
So the people who can't get their Maverick might go, hey, that Santa Cruz doesn't look too bad.
Also, yeah, they look very different.
They do.
So that's going to kind of be different people buying that for sure.
Yeah, the Santa Cruz looks a lot like the old Baja.
Yeah.
Which is neat. And I believe it even has that little hatch door. I'm going to have to check on that to see if there's that little pass through from the bed to the back seat.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Santa Cruz, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks more like a car with a truck bed while the Maverick just looks like a tiny pickup.
It does. It does. And it's funny because the Maverick's base front wheel drive.
It's basically a Fiesta or a Focus ST.
Yeah.
You know, underneath it. Well, not really, but it is for argument's sake.
Yeah.
So I wanted to close out this conversation today. We've talked about a lot of really cool cars, actually. And like I said earlier, we're kind of living in a heyday for small performance cars, which I never thought I would see again.
Right. Right. You know, it's sad to say that this is probably the last hurrah for internal combustion.
But I mean,
but what a hurrah.
I mean, and Toyota is apparently trying to make that not a thing. But what I want to ask you is, what cars, just pick a couple. I mean, there's probably a whole huge list we could run down. What modern cars, 2018 to now, do you think people are going to like pine for in the future?
So I think the new Z is going to be a big one.
Yeah.
It's hard to say now because it hasn't really been tested yet.
Yeah.
But the platform is old and tried and true.
The spec sheet makes a lot of sense.
It does. It does. And I think that's going to be a big one because people love their twin turbo Z32s to this day.
Yeah.
And I think that one is going to be a great modern classic. I think that's going to do well. I think history is going to remember that more fondly than the fifth gen Supra for sure.
You think so?
I think so.
Hmm.
I think it's going to age better.
I think you're right. I think the BMW reliableness is going to eventually catch up to the fifth gen Supra.
Yeah.
But I still think there's going to be I think it's actually going to flip flop. Like if you go back to the 90s, the Mark IV Supra is like the king.
Right.
And then the Z32 Z has its cult following.
It does.
And I think from what you're saying, I think in the future it'll be the other way around.
You think the Z will be the king?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Supra, there'll be just a diehard fan base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah. And I mean, both those motors are, you know, they're supposed to be able to take 600 horsepower with, you know, just minimal tuning.
Yeah. I mean, we've already seen out of the Z, AMS has like a 500 horsepower package for the Infinities.
And see, that's awesome. And I bet that's just like software and maybe some bolt-ons.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, intercoolers, intake, downpipes, software.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're limited by the automatic.
Oh, okay. So we're going to have a 6-speed manual.
Right.
So that kind of takes that collar off.
Yeah. So who knows where we'll see power figures. I think one of my first choices is completely obvious.
Yeah.
The GR Yaris.
Right.
I think history is going to remember that very fondly as like one of the last homologation specials.
And people love their hot hatches.
Yeah.
People love hot hatches with boost.
They do. And they really love it when it's a legitimate like WRC car
in
street clothing.
Yeah. You give it racing pedigree on top of that.
Right.
I think it's going to be well remembered as well.
I think so. But it'll kind of be one of those still kind of cult things because they didn't make a ton of them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we will see. I don't think the Corolla version will be quite as like fondly remembered, but who knows? Yeah. Maybe they'll smash it out of the park.
Well, you know, you've always got that kind of proximity effect when it comes to something like that. Like the Corolla may not be as valued, but if you can't get your hands on a Yaris,
right,
then the Corolla might be your choice.
Yeah.
And I think that's always neat because you get more options.
Yeah, know? This is true. Another one, another hot hatch. And like you were saying earlier about your BRZ and kind of tooting your own horn.
Right.
I do honestly think the Fiesta ST will be very fondly remembered and looked after or sought after rather.
Yeah. I mean, having ridden in your car, I think that might be the case.
Cause there just isn't anything else like it on the market.
Yeah. Something with that level of power and that size.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you normally have to go bigger, like a bigger car.
Right.
But your Fiesta's tiny.
Yeah. People don't realize how small that car is.
Yeah. It is not a Focus. It is small.
Right. So I think just the fact that Ford made that and sold it in America is so strange. I have a feeling like that's going to be pretty remembered in 40 years.
And it's funny to say Ford and sold in America because they always sold their best stuff outside of America.
Right? Weirdly enough.
Yeah, this American manufacturer.
Which I know there's a lot of Mustang people out there going like, no, the Mustang is the best. Well, no, you're wrong.
I mean, and the new Mustang is incredible.
The new Mustang is incredible.
And honestly, talking about modern classics, the modern Mustang sports car, I think, which, you know, obviously it's hard to call that a classic because it's been in constant production.
Yeah.
But I think that the modern Mustang, like as it is right now, independent rear suspension, Coyote V8, flat plane crank, if you go up to the GT350, I can't talk anymore.
That's why we're wrapping up here soon.
Yeah. I think that one's going to be really well remembered.
Yeah.
You know, Mustang doesn't need any help with its lineage. But I think that's going to be a great, like, you know, before, oh, well, now it's a Mach-E.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Because this might be kind of like the last hurrah of this style of Mustang. I kind of think it might kind of blend in to the background.
You think?
I think so. I think the special versions, like the GT350 and stuff like that, will be sought after. But like a regular V8 Mustang?
Yeah.
Look at the New Age Mustangs.
The, like the new 50s?
No, New Age was like their term for it when they, the 90s Mustangs.
Oh, okay, like the SN95s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like there is a kind of a cult for those a little bit.
Yeah.
But in general, people don't, they're not seeking those out.
They have been appreciating, which is kind of funny.
But I never expected everything.
That's true. Everything is. It was funny. I watched Spider-Man 1 the other day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came out in 2001 and there's an SN95 GT that pulls up as one of the popular kids' cars.
Oh, of course.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure that car came out, depreciated, and is now back up to that.
It probably is. Yeah. One American car though that I do think modern American car that will appreciate and is I don't think we're ever going to see the dip is the new Corvette.
Oh yeah, yeah, the C8.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think that's going to dip like every other Corvette.
Like I think the only dip we'll see is when production actually gets to the point where they're just available,
right?
And people aren't paying $100,000 for base Corvettes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think we'll see that really depreciate. At least not much.
No. It's so hot and new and different.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
And I'm happy to say that because I think that's going to push the price of the C7 down.
Hopefully.
Yes.
This is me saying that because that's a great cheap chassis.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
or if C5s ever just become actually cheap.
Yeah.
And not this weird, like, no, it's worth 12,000. I'm like, no, it's worth $4,000.
Right. Wait for it to get, I hope that the C5 will, I think if it weren't for COVID, we'd be seeing C5s routinely for under 10.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll actually get to that point because I'd love to buy a cheap C5 and just rag it. Just beat it up. It'd be so much fun.
Right? Yeah, I would. It's like the, what do they call it? The cheater drift car.
Yeah, I mean, it's already got the LS.
Right?
Yeah, you don't have to LS swap a Corvette.
Do you think any of these Hyundai Ns are going to like really be sought after?
You know, I think there's going to be people who really like them, especially the Veloster, because it just has so much character.
Yeah.
Two doors on one side and one door on the other. Yeah. That's just bonkers.
Just weird, yeah.
So I think that that's going to have a certain following. I don't think enough of these are going to be running in the future.
Right.
And that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. You
know, I think like if in 2040 I see somebody in a Veloster in, I'm going to be like, oh my God, that still runs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You kept that thing alive?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's true.
So that I think is going to hurt Hyundai is their reliability. Because they do make some cool stuff, but it's all cool and it's all new.
Yep, exactly. Hyundais don't age very well.
No, they really don't.
But as we've seen before with a lot of cars, like even cars that people didn't like when they were new,
right?
Given enough time, people love them again.
Right.
So
it's really funny how that happens.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see in another 20, 30 years when we are legitimately old.
Yep, actually old and not just making jokes about it to make ourselves feel better.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what all the kids are. Because, you know, the young kids right now want 80s and 90s cars.
They do.
Which is just so weird.
Right.
To people that were our age in the 80s and 90s.
Right, because we grew up that way.
Yeah.
And you know.
Well, we grew up when we were little when those cars were new.
Right.
But the people that were, like, our age now in that time probably remember those cars as garbage. That's, you know?
That's funny to think. It's all relative.
Right.
And now this next generation of kids is paying just absurd amounts of money for anything that runs from the 90s.
Right. So who knows? Who knows what we're going to see?
Yeah.
But hopefully there's still petrol around to power those cars.
Or at least some hydrogen or e-fuel.
Yeah. Give us something.
For God's sake. I just want to hear something banging off the rev limiter.
Right. I want an 18-year-old to buy a Fiesta ST, ironically, because it's an old car, with a crackle tune in 30 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to hear a crackle tune and be like, hey! You know,
the roads are going to be silent. just electric vehicles, and then you hear, pop.
Oh, man. That's the best future we can hope for right now, I think.
I think that would be a good one. I hope that Hoonigans exist
right
in the future.
Yep, keep on hooning.
Yep, keep on hooning.
All right, Chris, I think that's going to do it for us today. Thanks for coming over on a weeknight to get this recorded.
Oh, no problem.
So that way we can give our audience two in a row.
Absolutely. We promised you two, and here's your second.
Yep. Although we're going to go back to the regularly scheduled for right now.
Yeah, just for now.
Yeah. So it'll be 2 weeks till the next one. What that release date is, I don't know off the top of my head. But just follow us on your, you know, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
And then you'll know when we release one.
Yeah, there you go. You'll get an alert.
Yeah, exactly. Or you could follow us on Facebook and Instagram, because I always post when those go up there. That's religionofspeed.co. And if is there any, there's the YouTube thing, but I'm not really doing shit with that. I will promote that when I actually do shit.
The website you revamped during COVID looks good.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's religionofspeed.com. I actually got that domain.
Nice.
Luckily. But yeah, religionofspeed.com. You can always keep track of everything we're doing on that site. And of course, that leads us to...
I'd like to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song Colors off the album Traveler Part 1.
You got it.
You can find them at wheelstheband@bandcamp.com.
There you go. That is it for us tonight, heretics. Take it easy, and until next time, peace.